I've said my piece on that, Doug. So are you in PEI or are you in what's left of PEI? Heard you had a pretty severe storm, which may have impacted internet and technology. You see what I did there?
Yes, that's exactly why I wanted to choose this topic today. We got hit by, awesome, apparently it was a tropical storm, but it sure felt like a hurricane.
It's been a long time since I've lived in the Maritimes. So I guess, what was it? It was about 2 weeks ago at this point where this first happened for you? Or, I mean, what's the situation
days.
Now?
It was 20 days ago so that this happened. 1920, man. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and you mentioned in some communication with me that, that there people were kind of walking around a bit starstruck, a bit like stunned a little bit. What was your experience like with that? I mean, were you relatively lucky as far as all that goes? Or, I mean, what was your overall experience like?
When it came to damage to the house, we were good.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of trees.
Good.
Some of the trees knocked down. That was great. We lost power for 11 days. That was less good. So we have a brand new to us barbecue because warm food is positive and warm water is a good thing too. And I have a colleague that got their power back yesterday. So 19 days, no power. And he's a guy that works with the learning management system at my institution.
First of all, let me just say, I'm probably going to actually move that whole segment that we went through earlier about, lack of sketchiness, because in light of what you just said, it sounds pretty cavalier.
yeah, it's okay.
My first impression is, seriously, I do hope that you, your colleagues, and your friends are doing all well. I hope your dog as well. Who do we got in the background there who just made a sideways through the room?
That's Jasper. Can you hit pause for a second or cut this chunk out? I'm going to let him outside and he's staying outside.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, I'll just, we'll Frankenstein it. It's good. Oh. Back in the, COVID times a couple of years ago when, people started doing these home meetings all the time and, children or dogs or stuff would wander through the meeting and they'd just be like, oh, that's charming. This is all something that we're living through now. It's all good. My dog is actually sleeping under the desk. He's a small dog and he just curls up there. Yeah, so the digital divide. I guess I just have to say, first of all, already again, just my sincere, not condolences, but, thoughts and prayers, no. Everybody, including your LMS colleague, I hope you're all kind of getting through it. It seems like you are. What was going through your line here, Doug? I looked up a couple of things, definitions and whatnot. Why don't you just tell me what were you thinking about it in terms of this topic?
What I'm looking at, because this is the education non-technology podcast, is,
yes,
why are we doing so much with technology? Because the instant the power went, there was nothing. There was no education, right? It was people just surviving, right? And it's like good teaching, high expectations. Those matter. And technology is just the icing on the cake to make it easier, or the thing that's been added. And it drives me bonkers. It's how are we going to help these people that don't have power?
Yeah. So I think, again, not to sort of go back to the pandemic and kind of use that as a touchstone. But I mean, I think the pandemic definitely redefined or recast how, all of us use technology in whatever ways. So we're going to hone in here. We're going to talk about education. And it sounds like you're sort of in a situation where, you know, where you've scraped everything back, everything that can be plugged into an electrical outlet. And then what are you left with? And it's just like, this is your flat surface. This is your chalkboard. This is your table. This is your thing, which will be the basis for whatever teaching and learning you want to attempt, right? So yeah, the digital divide, speaking to, you know, folks, you know, who have varying levels of computing and internet access, generally speaking, would you say that the island was pretty much without internet largely during the hurricane and post-hurricane? Or maybe you want to just describe that a little bit more.
Yeah, there was basically nothing. Without any power, it was people out driving their cars around, charging their phones, and then trying to get updates on their phone. And the whole concept of, okay, we just don't have school this week. And thankfully, everything shut down for a week. But even when we came back, apparently textbooks don't seem to be a thing much anymore. Writing notes on a piece of paper, that's old-fashioned now. But they couldn't access laptops. They couldn't access desktops. They definitely couldn't access the network. And it's like, holy moly, I knew people that had their power back right away, like within a couple of days, but the internet was still down for a week. And it was just watching that infrastructure crumble. It's like, you and I are of an age where we didn't need the internet to go to school and learn. I think that's fair. I definitely didn't. I was a school teacher by the time the internet became a thing in school. So
I got my first email address in university. So, I mean, I'm a bit behind you there. I wasn't, you know, a teacher. I wasn't in my profession as yet, but it was exciting times, you know, going to the campus computer lab because you didn't necessarily have a computer. And, you know, just with the floppy disks and everything, it was, I don't know, it felt exciting. It felt exciting kind of to experience that. But now I guess probably we've maybe hit the point, would you say, Doug, where we're starting to see over-reliance has led to something where people are inadequately skilled to deal without these technologies?
Yeah, and why are we using so much? Because I'm going to jump back to Fiona again, Hurricane Fiona for a sec. And a couple of the post-secondaries here said, hey, if you need a shower or you need to charge your devices, come to campus. And after that shower, holy smokes, you feel like $1 million. But we do that with students every day, right? The kids that can't afford a computer or have one in their whole household, and we're trying to put all their schooling online, they have to come.
It's almost
campus.
Like, yeah.
Go ahead.
I almost wonder, just based on what you're saying. I mean, there was such a movement towards online and hybrid and high flex and the like, you know, in light of the pandemic, that maybe, you know, it was perhaps overly too much of an adjustment, so that now in situations such as you've described, where, you know, it's sort of human existence and survival first prior to this other stuff, that's, you know, perhaps somewhat problematic. You know, that we're looking, not that we're looking for problems, but in terms of just, you know, how that plays out. So I guess, Doug, within your role, I mean, so like, are people like, during that period, were people like, how was the mobile, is what I'm trying to say? Like, how was the internet access on mobile devices?
It was okay-ish. But I don't know if you've ever tried to access a learning management system on your phone. That's kind of gross.
I would kind of rather gouge out my eyes, I think, you know.
Yeah, me too.
Not quite, but I'm picking up the instrument and kind of holding it up and just thinking about it, you know. So
Yeah, I got some chisels in the garage if you want them, but it's that kind of thing. It's horrible.
we're gonna turn this in, we're gonna turn this into a podcast about educational woodcutting is what we're gonna do. We're just gonna we're gonna get the blocks, you know, like and just yeah, that's we're dialing all the way back. Well, not really.
Yeah, because it's part of what has driven me nuts for years is when I work with people that are doing the teaching and they're like, oh yeah, that's in the textbook. The students buy the textbook and then they have to get the, in my day, it was CD or DVD, or yeah, they have the access code to go to the publisher site. And it's like, what are you doing then? What's your job? Like, aren't you supposed to be teaching them? Why is all this stuff someplace else that you don't control the content? Because when I was as an educator, it drives me bonkers when somebody hands me content and says, you have to teach it just like this. Because I can't do it. I have to teach it my way. I have to engage with the students right there on the spot. So it's, oh yeah, they go to the publisher site and they click the buttons there and then it is integrated to the LMS and there's their score. It's like, oh, that just hurts me.
Right. Well, okay, so now you're kind of, it's been a while since I've kind of been, you know, directly involved in, you know, the delivery of ed tech services. But some of what you're describing, you know, in terms of, you know, these integrations, right, these plugins. So I guess, first of all, I still question whether learning management systems are, you know, worth all the time and effort and resources that we give to them. Because honestly, I can't really see anything that you'd want to do besides the marking function. If you take away the grading function that you want to do with an LMS, in my opinion, could probably be done more easily and with less, you know, foofery, I don't even know what that is, like ridiculousness, silliness. I just like then a class website, you know, it's like,
yeah,
I've taught kids, students, but all students, you know, how to use a basic, how to set up a basic WordPress website. And that was one thing I will say, I've got a lot of problems with the place I used to work, that we both used to work, a lot of problems. Boy, oh boy, I don't want to get started on that. Maybe I do, not right now. But I will say the WordPress, I mean, I got a tattoo, I got a camera, but this is like the WordPress logo tattooed. I got, you know, so that's something that has been really important to me. And every time I look at the LMS, my eyes just kind of glaze over. I'm just like, really, this is the best that all of these minds involved in this enterprise can come up with. Now my biases, I don't know. How do you feel, Doug?
When
in terms of the LMS and LMS access,
Well, with my PhD, I studied online learning environments back in 2001 to 2004, and I studied six different ones in my dissertation, and four of them were homegrown. Four of them were people over in that department created this thing that they used, and it worked for them. Like it just worked. I know that there's a university in Alberta that had six different LMSs 2 years ago. I haven't talked to anybody there since then. So there's not the monolithic, thou shalt use Moodle or thou shalt use Desire to Learn or Blackboard or whatever. It was what works the best for our students.
Right.
And it boggles my mind.
And that, I hear, first of all, I just got to throw this out there now. I keep coming up with different spin-off ideas, different things you kind of do, gimmicks, if you will. And one of the gimmicks I thought for the show might be that you and I could like do a really savage or gentle peer review of like one another's theses, right? Doctoral thesis. Like I throw you my thing from 2000. 2000 and whatever, your thing, and then we just comment on it, and that could be a show. So I don't know. I'm just putting it out there as a possibility, because I realize these conversations that as we sort of talk more. Oh, what? You glitched out. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. You glitched out on me a couple of times. My only concern with that is you want me to do more reading?
Yep.
I'll do it.
Well, I mean, there's some books in this apartment. I mean, I've you know, up on reading. I'll tell you what, Doug, I've been reading a lot of comic books lately, like just digitally.
Yeah.
Do now, and it's really, I don't know, it's kind of I can't stand TV. I got one, but I can't stand it. I don't even know why I have a TV. I know why I have a TV. I have a TV for my kids, and you know, like there are days where, like, even just the enterprise of sitting down at the laptop to do something, it drags at me. It just sort of like, I wish I didn't feel like I had to do this. So again, it's sort of like, where do we go when we want less? So what do you do in these kind of situations, Doug?
I try to convince people to use less technology, but think more about the technology they're using, which might sound bizarre.
Oh, no, man. Less, but more thoughtfully. That is dope. Please expand on that, my friend.
Well, yeah, it's like when you go to buy a car and they're like, oh, do you want this and do you want that? The last car I bought, we paid an extra $2,000 for this super fancy rearview mirror that's supposed to be able to have all these electronic functions, and I can't use it. The book's there and I got to go through the book, but I'm driving. When I'm driving, I can't use the rearview mirror thing. And it's, why are we doing the next whiz bang thing? Yeah, it's engaging for about 2 seconds. And then once the students realize what they really need to do to get through their learning and jump through whatever hoops the educator might happen to want, what are we doing? It's crazy. So it's think about what you're doing and use it selectively. Well, it's like cooking. Well, it's like cooking. If you want to make your food taste better, you add sugar or salt or butter, right? And I guarantee that if you add enough butter over time, you end up gaining 30, 40, 80 pounds, right? And it's not healthy. So why are we doing this as educators? It doesn't make any sense to me.
We're filling our students, the minds of tomorrow, with all this like lard, all this bloat, all these little experiences that you got to go through to get to the thing. It's like, you know, rodent in a maze. And then somewhere in there is, the food item. Just sort of let them, right? I mean, and there's all these small, like just little hoops you got to get through to just reinforce the platform, right? Like if you want to do your reading, you don't just grab it from the stack, pick it up. It's like, I got to turn on a computer. First, I have to assume, first you're assuming that I know how to use a computer. Second of all, you're assuming that I have a computer. Third, you're assuming that this software is going to be straightforward enough for somebody, to use. And it's making an assumption that, there is a general person and that you should just be able to, make sense of this stuff. And I just think there's a whole lot of really gross assumptions there. And I don't think it necessarily takes into account neurodiversities. I don't think it necessarily takes into account, I don't know, it just seems like everything you click on is designed to make somebody money. So if that's your assumption, then every time any student clicks on something in that environment, somebody's getting paid. So I don't know. I mean, I know who's benefiting. I don't know that it's the students. So.
Oh, yeah. Like, for me, this comes back to the meme I sent you that you said you're going to put in the show notes. It's the Star Wars meme where Luke Skywalker gets the lightsaber for the first time. I remember that as a child watching that movie and being so excited. Right? Oh, look at that. Isn't that fantastic? But the end of the meme is where, okay, now you have to log in and now click Jedi and do this. And it's like, yeah, how to suck the joy out of learning. And that's what we've done
it's
with
like, it. It's literally like, it's just like, you know, it's like all these subroutines and you just take it for granted. You just sort of think, okay, well, this is just part of the experience. And it's like, well, I mean, who decided that? Who, you know, I just figure, again, anytime you click on anything on the internet, somebody's getting paid. It isn't you. And why would it be different in learning environments? I mean, again, with all due respect to our colleagues who, you know, spend a lot of time and effort and energy in the so-called, you know, open education movement, producing high quality e-texts and learning, you know, objects and such. I mean, I think that, you know, there's value to be had. Again, I'm not sure what I'm getting at here, Doug. I feel like I've been rambling a fair bit. It's just sort of like, I don't know. Where's the priorities? Where, Doug? Are the priorities?
For that conversation, I'm a bit of a gatekeeper in my world. I think if you call yourself an ed tech person, ed tech people are educators first, so the students are the top priority. But some other groups have tried to take over the name, and it's like, if you're an ed tech person, you don't work for that company that's making the big cash, right? That's they're about money first and students second. And so for me, I have
an interesting point too.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I mean, your point in that, you know, as an educator, right? Your point comes from as an educator first, and then, you know, as a proponent or user of technology, you know, well behind that. It's an expensive piece of equipment, the learning system, and it puts a lot of power that's normally in the hands of, you know, the educator into people like tech support and administrators. And it's sort of, I don't want to say it takes away from, you know, the educators' efforts as such, but it definitely puts a lot more of that into the hands of, I don't know, like a manager, like a middle or senior manager who just looks at spreadsheets or whatever, and doesn't really have much to do with teaching or educating. Do you know what I'm getting at here? I don't think I'm just saying sour grapes. I think it's really like, it's getting too many people's hands on something, and it sort of maybe even makes some of these other non-educator folks maybe feel a bit more like educators than they probably are.
Well, just my opinion. Cool kids. We're the cool kids. Everybody wants to be like us. I see some
of
the difficulty
in my life, but
I see part of the difficulty is the structure of like contracts people are working under. And I see some educators that are just getting buried in teaching. The last semester I was a tenured professor, because I used to be a tenured prof. I taught 11 classes in one semester. And I was like a zombie by the end, because it's too much.
You had tenure?
Yeah.
What are you doing talking to me, dude?
One of those things.
Kidding.
No, but it's
one of those things. I didn't.
But people are buried under their workloads, and they're looking for anything to try to help them. I started going to the gym again, and I had a trainer, and the trainer was like, okay, do another 3 minutes of this ab workout. And by 1.5 minutes in, it's like, I'm cheating left and right? I'm not getting an ab workout. My whole body's moving instead of focusing on the muscles or whatever. And it's like what happens to some of these educators. Somebody says, oh, here, do this thing. It'll be less work for you. And you're drowning, so of course you're grabbing anything you can that's floating, trying to keep your head above water. So I understand why some people head in that direction.
It's almost like, this is interesting, Doug. I learned something new about you and your thing, you know, every time we talk, and I think it's great. But just in terms of going forward, you know, it's like, I just wonder, like, if we have more of this on the way, or if there's going to be, you know, sort of a return to, I don't want to say the before times, because this is well before COVID. I mean, what you're describing is an entire work culture where, you know, junior people take on a huge amount of work. And then, yeah, it's like you say, right? It's like a life raft that's coming at them. It's like, here's this thing, but it's like, maybe you should question, you know, not about the raft, but why you're in this situation where you need a raft in the first place. I got a doorbell, dude. Can I just grab that? Just 1 second. I'm excited. I got records in the mail. Anyway, the dog is excited about this too.
Cool. Now, another part of this is when we start talking about workloads and it's cheating to survive, right? It's, you're not doing your best work, right? Because you're buried under all this other stuff. And to be honest, the people that I've seen, some of the people that thrive in that environment, they're basically sociopaths. And sociopaths aren't fun to work with. Right? Some people thrive by 80, 90 hours a week, but the sociopaths are not fun to deal with. And I've had to deal with a few.
It can be exciting. They try and get you on their sociopath wavelength, like, be like me, buy it all, go for it all. You have to do this to survive. You have to do this to succeed. No friggin' way, dude. No friggin' way. So I don't know, man. I mean, in terms of the show, I mean, I've been, you know, throwing out various things. I've been trying some goofy giveaways on the internet, which nobody has emailed for, but that's okay. I've been loading up the hashtag. And, you know, I think I have been on my social media and stuff, maybe a little bit more emboldened to speak more freely about my past experiences. And I just keep wondering, it's like, was it me, or was it the place, or was it both, you know, where it just did not work out in the worst kind of fashion, right? Well, yep. Not the worst. I don't want to even think about what the worst could have been, but, you know, relative to what it was meant to be, you know? Yeah. So I just feel like for me, I'm off on a tangent, Doug. Help me out.
Yeah. I don't know a whole lot of your life story. Well, we're going to learn more and more as we go. But one of the reasons I am no longer a tenured academic was because one of the people that I had to deal with. And like, I have stories where somebody threatened the janitor. So the janitor let them into my office and they took a box of research, like all the student questionnaires and surveys and all this stuff. That paper ended up in BJET, the British Journal of Educational Technology, and I didn't get a mention in it. But I collected the damn data, and I was part of the research team until I wasn't. It was a good paper.
Dude, that sucks, and that's brutal. It does remind me now, I wasn't just bringing out my tale of woe for the show. The point to it actually was, what you got me thinking about was, and we may start to even sort of go into our final descent here in terms of this topic, just in terms of what we want to speak to. But like, I just keep thinking, Doug, since we've been talking just now, you know, it's really on culture. And if a place is like a positive place that values learning first, truly, and has its priorities and its organizational house in order, then, you know, the technology can sort of be gently brought in, and, you know, you sort of gently pick it up as per the needs of students and individuals. But I guess the other thing is if you're in a dysfunctional or toxic or stressful environment, whether or as an individual educator or, you know, wider within a unit or a department, or I'm not speaking to, but it's like, if something is off, then no bells and whistles whatsoever can help. And in fact, the risk of that, if introducing a high tech form into a fundamentally dysfunctional learning environment, is that your problems are going to be multiplied. It'll be, you know, technology plus dysfunction does not typically solve cultural dysfunction. And it does tend to open up a whole host of other issues. So,
and that's part of the divide that I wanted to get to, right? For this divide to work, thank goodness here, after this hurricane or tropical storm or whatever you call it, basically everybody was in the same boat until they weren't, right? There was no access. There were no resources. There was no support. And then as people started to get power again, and hey, I have power, so I'm excited, right? That's where the bar is. I have power, I have warm water, and I have warm food. So that's the bar. But all my time was taken up trying to survive on the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And we do that with students all the time. Yeah.
Man, this is a real educational conversation. I mean, I'm going to be able to now put in Maslow's hierarchy of needs into the show notes. So thank you for that, Doug. And no, man, you're right. It's like, I guess just, you know, to kind of come back to the impetus for the topic, for, you know, because we were talking about, you know, doing something else originally as a topic, were we not? You kind of had something else in mind, which I think was also really good. You got a lot of really good ideas here, actually. It's rooted in a personal experience for you. So I think actually for the show notes too, I'm going to try and just grab some post. What was the hurricane's name?
Fiona. The same as the ogre in that Shrek movie. So. It just brought it all back. Sorry, go ahead.
No, man, that's dope. I was just going to say, like, I've raised children past the age of 10 at this point, and I've never watched a Shrek movie, so that just makes me an ogre, I think. we got to get some hurricane pictures up there on the notes, and we got to get the Star Trek meme for sure. And Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Man, this is dope. Immensely, my friend.
Well, that's the hope. I had all kinds of references. I was going to start citing literature and stuff, but I'm glad we didn't have to do that. And we could just use the info in my head. Right? Nah,
well,
we can do that next time.
Shoot them over to me.
Oh, I'll shoot them over to
you. Yeah, you know what? Because, like, but I mean, just in terms of, like, you know, again, it's funny to say, because my plan for today, I spent 2 or 3 hours reconfiguring the physical setup in, you know, my apartment for this, and not that you necessarily notice. And by the end of it, I have to tell you, Doug, it did not bring me joy. It was like, it did not bring me joy to do that. I'm not somebody who's going to get enamored with the tech because of the whiz, you know, the whiz bang. And I know for sure that you're not like that yourself.
No.
So yeah, I mean, I guess in summary, Doug, I mean, what would you like to say is your sort of final position on this? And by the way, I think we kick ass just for getting a whole episode up, you know? So I just think that in itself is speaking to the efficacy of technology, despite, you know, some concerns.
Absolutely. I feel really kind of Amish about it, the way somebody has described what Amish is, or Amish, sorry, Amish, because they don't, from what I've been told, they've been told they don't want technology to run them. They want it to be useful to add to their lives. And sometimes with teaching, it's too much. Yeah, they want to purposefully use it. Thank you for that word. And when I didn't have it,
introduce into the conversation.
Yeah, you have another hashtag to add up if you want. But it's the purposeful use to make things better. That's why we're here. Otherwise, I'd go do something else.
And the purpose, you know, I would hope is going to be, you know, in the hands of the educator, as opposed to the vendor or, you know, the admin or, you know, whomever, you know, all that. I mean, and it's like those folks are all important and necessary. But if you start throwing things in between the teacher and the student, then I don't know. I just can't help think that something's getting lost there. But
yeah, that's it. Like, I've met and worked with amazing vendors and amazing support people in businesses and stuff. It's been great. But the student has to come first, and the educator, in my gatekeeping definition, the educator has to be the one getting them there. And I'm proud to be a gatekeeper, because I think education has soft boundaries. Anybody can call themselves teacher. And I'm like, nope, there are certain definitions. But that's my issue. That's my cross to bear. I carry that with me.
Man, I've never met anybody. Oh, go ahead.
One last thing. I want to apologize, because I know we were aiming for Thanksgiving, but I didn't have like the little gerbil in the wheel spinning to get the power to my computer, so I just couldn't do this last week.
Man, you don't need to apologize for at all. You know what though? I just want to just throw it to you now, since first of all, I agree with everything you said wholeheartedly, and I think we have the basis for further discussions. You know, your whole a situation has maybe been more conducive to a ramshackle, just trying to get it going kind of thing. My current circumstances, without giving you the whole barrage about my personal life, you know, it's pretty much, I feel lucky today just to have achieved this, you know?
Yeah.
Really.
That's a big deal.
The moment shows itself to you, and you just have to live with it, right? You just have to within that moment, and how you go about that is, you know, as much as it can be. It's like he's gonna come regardless, right? So
absolutely.